Hello there. This is Sam Jones, Flash Gordon, and Denny Colt, a.k.a. The Spirit. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Where else but on Comic Book Central are you going to get back-to-back Flash Gordons? Nowhere, I say. Hello, once again, true believers. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Thanks for joining me here in the lair, where the Mongo madness continues, as does the celebration of Flash Gordon. 80-year anniversary in 2014, 35th anniversary of the feature film this very year. We kicked things off a few weeks ago with actress Melody Anderson, who played Dale Arden in the film. Flash himself, the TV version that is, Eric Johnson, he was in the lair last week to talk about the Sci-Fi Network series. And I wasn't sure it was going to happen in time, so that's why I didn't say anything a few weeks ago when Melody was on. But as you heard in the show open, today I get a chance to welcome the star of the 1980 cult classic film. Yep, that's right. Flashback to back. He is a miracle, king of the impossible. He's Flash Gordon. Sam Jones. Sam Jones was born in Chicago, and his early choices nearly led to careers quite different than saving the universe. He joined the Marine Corps at a very young age and even got a chance to play semi-pro football with the Burien Flyers before becoming a model and eventually turning his attention to acting. 1979 turned out to be a pivotal year in the life of Sam Jones. A brief turn as Bo Derek's husband in Blake Edwards' hit comedy 10 got Sam a start in show business, and then he made a memorable appearance that same year on The Dating Game, vying for the affections of the Gong Show's J.P. Morgan.
All right. Please welcome the very adventurous Sam Jones. Sam, welcome to the show.
Now we're going to have them say hello first and see how they sound, okay?
Okay, and how about number three?
You and me, J.P.
My goodness.
Smart dialogue.
Sam didn't get the date, but he did get something a lot better. As it turns out, the mother-in-law of Flash Gordon producer Dino De Laurentiis just so happened to be watching The Dating Game that night at her famous son-in-law's house. Dino De Laurentiis made a few phone calls, and the rest is comic book movie history. With only one feature film under his belt, Sam was given the lead role in the big-budget flick that brought Alex Raymond's creation back to the big screen. Now, while the film was a success in a number of countries, Flash didn't make much of a splash here in the United States, and some legal wranglings kind of put the kibosh on future sequels, but Sam certainly wasn't done with the world of comic book characters. In 1987, after numerous TV appearances, including the ABC drama series Code Red, Sam got back into the world of primary colors as Denny Colt, also known as Will Eisner's classic comic creation, The Spirit, alongside future Star Trekker, Nana Visitor. Now, you've seen Sam in a ton of projects since then, but he obviously has a soft spot in his heart for Flash. Nearly unrecognizable in makeup, he appeared on an episode of the 2007 Flash Gordon series as the Prisoner Kreb. And Flash fan and Family Guy creator Seth MacFarlane cast Sam as himself, kind of, in the 2012 comedy Ted and this year's sequel Ted 2. In between acting gigs and thrilling Flash flans at conventions, this former Marine is now running security ops in high-risk environments. That's right, he's still saving lives, only this time, it's for real. Well, we're continuing our celebration of 80 years, plus, of Flash Gordon, and 35 years of the feature film Flash Gordon. We've got the star of the film, the savior of the universe, Flash Gordon himself, Sam Jones. Sam, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Oh, thank you. Joe, it's a pleasure to be here.
Glad to be celebrating the 35th anniversary of this movie with you. I guess there's one other big anniversary we should talk about. 2015 is the 75th anniversary of Denny Colt, The Spirit.
Yeah, we filmed The Spirit as a television pilot in 1985, and I just had a great time filming it. A great cast, and that was a couple years ago as well, Joe.
We're going back a little bit, so we're going to talk about these anniversaries. Yeah. We're going to talk about these great comic book characters. But first, I'm curious how you got your start in the business. At what age did you sort of develop an interest in acting?
Well, I probably in my early 20s. You know, I spent some time in the Marine Corps. I joined the Marine Corps when I was 17. I got out. Years later, I went to Seattle, my early 20s. I was playing football in the Marine Corps. I said, I'm going to go to Seattle, and I'm going to play professional football for the Seahawks. And I got there, and I decided, let me just train with their practice team, their semi-pro team. And I did that for a season, and I said, you know, there's got to be something else. And I actually read an article on Clint Eastwood and the success that he had, and it had an impact on me. My mindset at the time was, well, I don't know if I can ever accomplish what he has, but maybe after 20 years I could reach part of that goal. And that was my incentive to head to L.A., and I decided to give myself 6 months of progression, meaning if I progressed every 6 months, I would add another 6 months. If I found myself, stepping backwards and degressing, then I made a promise to myself, okay, I'm done. It's not going to work for me. But every 6 month intervals, something happened positive. There was always a slight progression forward, and it just and then 1978 was the first film with Bo Derek called Ten, and then from there it skyrocketed.
That's really all you need in Hollywood, though, right? It's just that next thing to just keep moving you forward, just knowing that that's right there.
Yeah, you do, and you have to listen to some, make sure you have some wise mentors around you, and you have to be careful. You have to constantly humble yourself and continually to learn to get over yourself. You know, it takes work. But yeah, humility in any business goes a long way. And you know, I was just a country southern boy when I arrived in L.A. and so I didn't. I wasn't tainted yet.
I was going to say humility isn't always easy to breed in Hollywood. That's not the easiest quality.
But
there.
No, I had a lot of confidence. So I really, there were no voices in my head saying you can't do this. You know, at that point I didn't have any press to read or any. You know, any of the critics were writing anything about me because I really had not worked as a professional. And then I just went at it, you know, the way I went at football and life and the Marine Corps. And we started hitting some very good success.
Well, you mentioned football a couple times. I have to ask, you didn't play quarterback, did you?
No. Okay. I did not play quarterback.
Because you throw a mean football in Flash.
Yeah,
we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
What position did you play?
I was the smallest tight end in the league. You know, nowadays tight ends are, what are they, 6'6"?
Oh, they're monsters. Yeah, they're monsters.
270?
Yeah.
Yeah, 275. I mean, they're huge, and they're fast.
Well, they get them in a lot of blocking schemes, too, because you come in. So it's not only you got your receivers, but then if you got to set up play action and things like that, I mean, you've got to hit a 300-pound lineman. So, yeah, these guys are monsters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, you mentioned Blake Edwards' comedy 10. That was 1979. Yep. That was your first film. Bo Derek's husband in the film?
Yes. Well, actually, Bo Derek played my wife.
Oh, yes, of course. It's a joke, though, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course she did.
Yeah, nobody really knew Bo at the time. Of course, I was completely unknown. And people did know of Blake Edwards and Julie Andrews and Dudley Moore.
Yeah.
And I just used that. I believe that helped me a great deal in securing the role of Flash Gordon, because while I was filming 10 in Mexico and Hawaii, I had this audition for Dino De Laurentiis, and he asked me what I was doing, and I told him I was doing a Blake Edwards, Julie Andrews film. And that had a lot of pull.
Oh, that! What more do you want? I mean, that's a resume that, right there.
I didn't say, by the way, I only had one line of dialogue.
It doesn't matter.
The whole movie. Yeah, I think my dialogue was I was at the beach and I think I said, "I'm going to get a surfboard."
Hey, you were cast.
Honey, be careful. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you're not the star of the film, obviously, but hey, you're in it. You mentioned the three legends that were in it. What did you pick up from those three individuals? Julie Andrews, Blake Edwards, Dudley Moore. My goodness. What an acting lesson there.
Yeah. Blake was a man with a pure giving heart. When he found out, remember, I am not the lead in this movie, but when he found out, you know, we're on an island, a small island in Hawaii, and when he found out that I had a meeting with Dino De Laurentiis for the role of Flash Gordon, he hired a helicopter to fly me to the airport, Honolulu Airport, to fly me to Los Angeles to make sure that I made that meeting in time. And that was Blake Edwards' character, and he went way out of his way to do that. And just a top creative guy. I remember a couple of times we would all show up for work and he'd take his little piece, his little eyepiece, and look up at the clouds, look at the sun. He'd say, and we're talking early in the morning. He'd say, it's not going to work today. Everybody go relax and have fun.
Are you kidding? He just bagged on the day.
Yeah, because he had to have the pure blue sky and the bright shining sun. And then, of course, Julie Andrews was a top professional too. Just a great person, beautiful lady. Bo Derek, her first role, she was incredible. Very humble, very giving. And who else was it? Dudley Moore, of course. Dudley Moore was the, he kept everybody laughing the entire time. I mean, he was... even when the camera was not rolling, he was the guy. He was Mr. Entertainer. And also, I spent a lot of time with Bo's husband, John Derrick, who was a legend. And we would have many, I think we were in Mexico for a long time. I think we must have had lunch together four or five times, maybe more than that. And he would share old Hollywood stories with me about he himself and Errol Flynn and Peter O'Toole and the list went on and how they would, just how Hollywood was in the 40s and 50s. That was wonderful.
Well, and you think about Dudley Moore, you mentioned him, because some of the projects we want to talk about, obviously The Spirit, Flash Gordon, a lot of comedic elements coming into those. So I mean, you had access to two of the greatest comedy minds, Blake Edwards and Dudley Moore. Did that help you to kind of keep the sets light and to kind of keep the comedy timing going on these future projects that you did?
Yeah, I mean, when you're young, I think it was 1978, I was 24. And you're thrown into something that you don't have a lot of experience at. This is the time you need to just be, not talk a lot and be an excellent listener. And I was. I mean, I didn't know what to expect. I was in acting school. I was training. I was in scene study classes. I was taking improvisation classes. But this is your first movie, so I just decided to be an excellent listener, and being a former Marine, I'm very good at following orders and following instructions. So, that's easy to do, and it was great. I had a lot of support, and I believe that everybody created a very successful project.
We talked about some of the, obviously, chronologically, we're heading into Flash Gordon here, but I want to ask you about one other movie, because Flash has kind of taken over a big chunk of your life, I would say. You're coming full circle with it now as well. But I want to talk about, before we get into Flash Gordon, The Spirit. We referenced it earlier. You shot it in 85. This was a TV movie based on the classic Will Eisner character. We're celebrating the 75th anniversary of him this year. How did you get into the world of this comic book character, Will Eisner's The Spirit, Denny Colt.
Yeah, I mean, they the network and the studio, I mean, everybody just, you know, it, in those early years, it's a big Hollywood casting process. You know, I'm not sure how many people, I mean, I didn't even find out, as a side note, auditioning for Flash Gordon, I didn't realize until years later some of the actors who actually auditioned, because Dino was very big on non-disclosure and confidentiality. He didn't even want the same actors auditioning in the same little meeting room. They'd come in one door and go out another door.
Oh, wow.
So auditioning for The Spirit for network, and I mean, I really wasn't clear on, and you know, it, at that time, again, that's something I never really focused on. I don't think it was arrogance at all. I believe it was just confidence. When a lot of times, you know, you hear actors talk about how they would walk into an audition and they'd see, you know, 10, 20, 30 actors in the lobby, but not at one time, maybe as many as 12 or 15 at one time, and you see some big names or whatever. Well, I never looked at any other actor in that room as my competition. I really sincerely thought, with a pure heart, I thought, oh, well, if they want Sam Jones, they're going to get Sam Jones. If they don't want me, it's not because of anything I did wrong. It's because they want Kurt Russell, you know, and that's how I thought. I never looked at it as any type of competition. Of course, you had to use wisdom. You had to be prepared professionally to go in there and not just wing it. But that's how I looked at everything in my life, really. And then after a while, when you start working years later, you start reading your own press, whether good or bad. And then you become a little bit tainted. And then you start thinking, you start listening to voices in your head that shouldn't be there. But but as far as the, that's a long answer about the casting process for The Spirit. But yeah, I just, they, and of course I used Flash Gordon from that. I know that helped a great deal. I think by the time I did Flash Gordon, which came out in 80, anything else I did, especially after 81, I came out of a hit TV series. I mean, it lasted a year, but it was a big hit, Code Red. Mm-hmm. But I would use that. My representation, Joe, would use that. And a lot of times I would, you know, I would bypass the early stages of the casting process and just go read for network or producers or something like that, you know.
Well, you had the look. I mean, that when you look at the comic book character, it's you. I mean, you had the look nailed. So I'm guessing even just when you walked in, it's amazing. And when you think about this movie, I don't know that it necessarily gets the credit it deserves, because it obviously, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, why it didn't make it to series in a second, but it's got all the elements coming into it. I mean, it's got that comic book look. To me, it kind of reminds me of a cross between like a serious crime drama and maybe the Batman and Green Hornet series from the 60s. It's kind of got that feel to it. And of course, the great name of Visitor that we know from Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Matter of fact, when we filmed Ted 2, well, we finished about 6-7 weeks ago, in the early stages of Ted 2, Seth MacFarlane always has a major table read where he brings the actors in to sit around a conference table. And actually, he brought Nana in to read some, not just one character, but a lot of the actors and actresses that he likes. He'll bring them in. And that's so I sat right next to Nana. Oh. This was early this year. Well, we started filming in July. What am I talking about? July, August. Yeah, I think July. So a couple of months. So early 2014, I sat next to Nana, Visitor. It's the first time that we had seen each other since we did The Spirit together.
Are you kidding me? Did you know she was going to be there?
No, I didn't. Oh. No, you know, it was a great surprise.
I can't believe you guys haven't worked together since then, because the chemistry between the two of you is really solid in the movie, and there's so much comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the great scene where you're like trying to throw her out of a window, like trying to rescue her, and it's just like she's trying to, you know. Talk a little bit about working on that project, and maybe even your prep work going in. Like, were you familiar with the character and Will Eisner's book?
Well, I picked up, you know, we didn't have Google. I don't think in 85, no, we didn't have.
Nope.
Computers, so I picked up some comic books and this and that, and and called a couple people who were comic book collectors, and they really filled me in on the Spirit. Of course, as a boy, I remember a little bit about him. But I was more into Army soldiers and stuff like that, the little Army soldiers and stuff like that, than I was actually following comic books as a little boy. But, yeah, I just went in there and prepared. Joe, when you're doing these things, especially if you're the lead, something like this, you are in almost everything, so you don't have a whole lot of, I mean, you got to do your preparation, yes, but once you do that take, it's done, it's on film, it's over, now you got to move on to the next rehearsal, the next scene, whatever it is. And
you shot it in 16 days, right? You shot it in 16 days?
Something like that. Yeah, it was quick. It was quick. It really was. So, you just go for it, and hopefully you're making the right choice. Hopefully you're being being true to the character, and hopefully the director is happy. If he's not happy, hopefully he'll vocalize that and say, hey, you know, Sam, why don't you try it this way? And I love to hear that. I really do. You know, it's good that actors are praised all the time, but I really want to hear, you know, hey, Sam, you know, maybe your thinking is wrong there. Why don't we try it this way? You know, and that's really what I want to hear. That's what I want to hear from the people who care about me as well and who love me. You know, and my wife says that all the time. She basically says, no, Sam Jones, you're absolutely wrong on all points right there. I said, honey, thank you for being honest.
True mark of a good spouse. That is absolutely
true.
It's got a great look to this. You know, we've got the primary colors, the kind of 40s look. Did you get a chance to meet Will Eisner at all and get his input?
I did. I did. He came on the set one day. He was wonderful. Oh. Wonderful man. If I'm not mistaken, he had to approve the show. He had to approve me. He had to approve the overall look and obviously the script. If I'm not mistaken, I know he was guaranteed certain approvals on that.
What did he say when he met you and saw his character come to life?
What did he say? He said, it's funny. He was a man of few words when I met him. I think he just looked at me and said, good, that'll work. Something like that, you know?
Nice. Well, hey, you got the thumbs up from the man himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now this was intended to go to series, though, correct? And there was, if I'm reading right, some turmoil at ABC.
Here's the deal: when we do these projects, you have so many different bosses to please. Especially, you have a studio, you have a network. It's so odd. There's no rhyme or reason. You're gonna have the best pilot or movie of the week or TV series on the air. But because the network had a deal with somebody else before, they have to fulfill that promise or that back order or whatever. It's really madness with so many different bosses. And so that's why you're hired to do a job. You better show up on time. You better be a professional, and you better deliver. And you know what? Guess what, Joe? It's in God's hands. At that point, it's out of your hands. It's even out of the network's hands because they always have somebody to answer to.
Isn't that
amazing?
The good thing about it is it's now in our hands because we can go on Amazon. Warner Brothers released it on DVD finally. We can watch it. So go out and buy it and enjoy the Spirit, the original Spirit. Hey, Flash Gordon, are you ready to talk about it?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, this is one of our favorite movies. We had a chance to talk to Melody Anderson about it, so we got a little bit of background. This was not a 16-day shoot for you.
No, it was more like 5.5 months, maybe more, you know, something like that.
What an amazing job, too. Do you ever get tired of the theme song?
Never. I haven't heard it in, I think maybe 3 or 4 minutes.
Do you, like, when you're doing stuff around the house or if you're doing, is it, because it's 35 years of this now, does Queen ever just, like, blast in your head when you do something?
Yeah, no, it does. Or people around me just come up to me. Even on the street sometimes, I could be anywhere. I could be in London. I could be in Los Angeles or, you know, in my home in San Diego. And, instead of somebody come up to me and say, "Hey, Sam, how you doing?" Or, "Hey, Flash," they'll just start singing the song. Boom.
So you just run up to you and just go, "Flash."
Yeah, that's right. No, that's happened many times. Many times. The funniest thing I get all the time, I get this all the time, and it's hysterical. They'll come up to me and say, "My God, does anybody ever tell you that you look like that guy, Sam Jones, that played Flash Gordon?" I said, "You know, I hear that all the time." And you know what, Joe? That's the end of the conversation. They don't say, you know, I don't say, "Well, I am the guy," or they don't continue on to say, "Are you him?" It's just, that's the end of the conversation. They walk away happy, and I walk away happy. It's hysterical.
I think anybody listening to this podcast, though, would know it's you and would that's amazing. So, were you familiar at all with the character, like how the serials, the old movie serials with Buster Crabbe? Like, what kind of homework did you do to get into the character of Flash Gordon?
I had such a great opportunity to do. I think I did 3 talk shows with Buster Crabbe. We did. I'm sure you might. I'm not sure how old you are, but do you remember the Tom Snyder show?
Yes. I remember Tom Snyder, and I remember Dan Aykroyd imitating Tom Snyder.
Oh, that's hysterical. We did the Tom Snyder show. We did Good Morning America, and we did Good Morning Los Angeles back in, when I went to Open Flash. And he was wonderful. A gracious man. Looked great, you know. And I'm just glad I had an opportunity to spend time with him.
Did you get to watch? Were you watching his serials, kind of doing the homework? Because Melody mentioned that she kind of did this crash course in Flash Gordon.
Yes, absolutely.
What did you take away from those serials? Like, what did you want to bring to it from those amazing serials?
Well, I liked his look, and when I first saw Buster Crabbe as Flash Gordon, I understood one reason why Dino hired me, because if you take a photo of Buster Crabbe at the age of 25 and a photo of me at the age of 25, and you compare them, you would think, "My God, are they fraternal? Are they identical twins?" Seriously. Yeah, I mean, it really is. The similarities are remarkable, Joe. When I first saw the black and white, I thought, "Oh, man, look at that. That looks like me, number one. Number two, oh, that's hysterical. But I like this hero he's playing." And number three, I thought, "Oh, my God, those are some crazy off-the-wall special effects. A little rocket ship on a wire with a sparkler coming out its tailpipe, you know." I said, "My God, this is hysterical."
You had a few more dollars to play with, I think, in your version.
Yeah, we did. Yes, we did.
The money's definitely up there. We talk about the special effects, but I think we got to talk about the stunts. You did a lot of your own stunt work in the film.
Yeah, I mean, I did because I was 25 years old, very fit. Same age. I mean, you know, I feel this many years later, 35 years later, I feel as though, I mean, I am fit because all I do is train. I have to, you know, my kids are all older now, but I make it a point that I could always beat them in pull-ups and push-ups, and which I can. But yeah, I was, look, when you're 25 and you're fit and you're an athlete, it really adds value to what the director's, to the director's vision. If you could do your own fight scenes and certain action scenes, you know, I didn't like to do fire, I didn't like to do high falls. But everything else we basically did, you know.
Well, let's talk about that fight with Timothy Dalton. How much prep went into that, and, you know, injuries? How serious were you guys about this fight scene?
Oh yeah, elevated rotating revolving disc with the spikes. Yeah, that was quite challenging. I think we were at that for almost a month, including rehearsals and filming and everything. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think at its highest peak, you know, when the disc was rotated, if you were on the upper edge, the highest point, I think you're about 35 feet in the air. And what they did in England, they had a bunch of boxes. I know it sounds sort of prehistoric, but it worked very well. They would stack boxes. They would offset these gigantic boxes and stack them really high. And so when your body fell onto them, your body would actually mold into these boxes. And never got hurt. You know, at first it felt, oh, that's kind of a jab in your kidneys or something like that. But yeah. And then, of course, you had all the different technicians operate every time Timothy Dalton and myself would fall or roll while we were bullwhipping each other. You know, the guys on the hydraulics were operating the, now the spikes were, they were a metal shaft, but the tips were a hard rubber. So even if you hit the shaft, the rubber tip, you could still get hurt by the metal shaft. So
yeah, I saw an early interview with you where you mentioned that, where, I mean, these, yeah, they're rubber tip, but they're, I mean, there's still potential for injury there.
Yeah, I mean, thank God we didn't have any injuries. If Timothy accidentally hit me with the bullwhip, you know, then I would make sure I hit him even harder on purpose. So yeah, we got some good stuff.
What was your training like with the bullwhip? So that's actually the two of you going at each other with bullwhips, though, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, they were real bullwhips, absolutely.
What was your training with that process? Like, did you work with specialists?
We actually had a bullwhip instructor, you know, a cowboy, that would train with us and stuff. And then we did it for, like I said, a couple of weeks.
Oh, wow. Was Timothy ever worried that, I mean, what was the conversations like? Like, hey, Sam, like, back up a few feet.
No, I mean, we just, you know, we had to really watch our P's and Q's. I mean, it was something that had to be rehearsed and choreographed, and just to make sure that we wouldn't injure one another. And, you know, and at the same time, we had to make it real. So I think our relationship and the way we reacted towards one another, good guy, bad guy, it was very real. And there were, you know, I wasn't just kidding. There were times when we accidentally would whip each other and it would leave a tiny mark. And thank God we didn't get hit in the eyes.
Yeah, again, not in the face. Not in the face. they're actors. Not
That's
in the
right.
face. I have to.
That's
I love
right.
this. I love this quote by director Mike Hodges. I mentioned it to Melody. I got to mention it to you too. The director Mike Hodges called Flash Gordon the only improvised $27 million movie ever made. I love that line.
Oh, that's hysterical. I never heard that before. That's hysterical.
What did you make? We talked about with Melody making up the quarterback scene. So you guys kind of made that up on the spot. What else? The ending? Like, did they have an ending for this film? Because there's a crazy ending where you do this, like, this great, like, jump into the camera. Did you make that up?
No, that was definitely scripted. You know what? Yeah, I believe part of that was scripted, and then I think maybe Mike said, you know, maybe just jump up towards the camera this time.
Okay.
Yeah.
What else did you make up? What else?
Scene, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. It's so crazy because it's like, the universe is saved, and then Flash is like he'd do what any quarterback does, right?
Oh, yeah, it was funny. Yeah, it was hysterical, you know.
What else did you make up on the spot?
Oh, I don't know, because when you're making things up on the spot, once it's over, I have a tendency to forget what I made up because it wasn't scripted. It was just a spur-of-the-moment thing, you know?
Oh, it's amazing, but how it all comes together. And talk about working with the great Max von Sydow, because we talked about on 10 how you had these legends. You go right into another movie with another legend, going toe-to-toe with Ming the Merciless. What was it like to work with this amazing actor?
Yeah, he was wonderful. He was one of my mentors. You know, he taught me two things. There's certain things in your life that are not only memorable, but they're so prevalent in your life that they stick with you forever and ever. And also, it's a way of shaping you. What he instilled into me, which I'll never forget, and I took his advice and I carried it on with everybody else in every scene I ever did. But what happened was, as you know, when you're making movies, Joe, it can take a lot of time in between turning the camera around. In other words, we shoot your close-up and all the everything from this side of the room. Well, we're going to shoot it on you and everything in the foreground, the background. And then, of course, by the time you turn camera around to shoot the close-up of the other actor, you know, it could be a couple hours, and lighting and preparation and all that. So a couple hours had gone by, and it was time to do my close-up, and Max showed up off-camera to do my off-camera lines, and he had all of the, you know, the off-camera dialogue. And he had his entire wardrobe on, and it weighed about 60 pounds, and he wasn't even on camera. And I looked at him, I said, Max, I said, it's okay. You don't really have to do that, you know. It's just a quick little line I have. And he turned to me, Joe, and he said, Sam, I'm going to give you the off-camera lines, and I expect the exact same thing from you for the rest of this shoot. I said, yes, sir. So,
wow. That is a great story.
It was a teachable moment. And you know what? And it wasn't just for me. I mean, he wasn't just talking about this. This is something that is huge in the movie business, where a lot of actors who have gone beyond being spoiled, they don't think they have to do, they believe they don't have to do off-camera dialogue. They've already done their close-up, and they're taken care of. Now, they don't have to go back in and give off-camera to the other actor, especially a so-called insignificant actor or a character. Well, and I understand why Max taught me that, because sometimes it's even better just to stare at a dot on a wall, you know, compared to what you're getting from other actors, you know.
Wow.
So he proved his point, no matter what, be a professional at all times and show up. If 2 hours go by or 3 hours go by, whatever, go back to the set. And even though you're not on camera, give the other actor, feed him his dialogue. So we can get a good performance out of that actor while his close-up is being filmed. And it was a great lesson. It really was. It was wonderful.
That's amazing. That is an amazing story. Yeah. Because when I'm watching the film, I assume, when you're looking at the camera, I'm assuming that's a PA or somebody just feeding you lines off, you know, eating a donut in one hand and going, you know, curse you, Flash Gordon, or something, you know, and you're like trying to react to that. That's actually Max von Sydow standing there in costume. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, there are time constraints where maybe the other actor has to be taken over to second unit, and maybe he can't give you your off-camera lines. I mean, if it's a big, important scene, they're going to wait and have everybody there. But if it's just a couple of lines of dialogue, most of your top, I shouldn't say most of your top, there is a higher percentage of top name actors who will not do off-camera dialogue if it's just a, you know, a one line or two line or three lines or something like that, you know.
But for Max, he was as big as it gets. I mean, that's a legend.
Well, he made it very clear that, Sam, I'm going to do this for you, and I expect the exact same thing from you. And what he was saying, this is the way it should be in the business for everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
he expected that white T-shirt with the name Flash right in front of him as he's reading his lines.
Yes,
that is.
Yeah. Well, you have to understand, he was in full costume on my close-up. He wasn't even seen.
Yeah.
You know, wow. So.
Do you still have the shirt, by the way? Do you have the T-shirt?
Oh, yeah. No, I have the original Flash Gordon handmade T-shirt, yes.
When was the last time you were in it?
That's a good question. I think I slept in it last night. No, I'm kidding. I don't think I put it on because I'm afraid to. You know, it's a little bit. You know, it's 35 years old, so it's a little bit yellowish. Even though it's been inside a garment bag, inside a closet, in a time, what do you call it? Not a time capsule, a climate-controlled closet.
Yeah,
it's still turned a little bit yellowish. The light has, you know.
Okay. Well, it's 35 years. We've all changed a little bit in 35 years. So, I love that you have it. That's amazing. You know, here's the thing. I think there's a perception that the film didn't do well. I mean, no sequels. You know, you go on. But the film did very well in Europe. It did well in many places outside the U.S. Had they talked about sequels with you? Were you – because here's this whole thing. Because Mike Hodges kind of has one – he came out a few years ago and said, here's what happened. I just want to get your take on it as to – I mean, we should have had like a bunch of Flash movies.
Yeah, and I believe it's going to happen very soon because it's been passed down. It's been optioned, but the options were not picked up by first and foremost, currently, Matthew Riley at Fox, he's VP in charge of production at Fox Studios. He made sure that they acquired the screenplay rights of Flash Gordon because just like Seth MacFarlane, Matt Riley was a huge fan of Flash Gordon. He acquired the rights. He brought John Davis, the producer, in, and they're writing the script now, and they're going to do, as far as Matt is concerned, they're going to do, and I actually met with Matt, they're going to do Flash Gordon, the sequel. Absolutely. It's in the making, and it could be a year and a half to 2 years away.
Why didn't we get it, though, in the 80s, though? Because this seemed like a no-brainer, and there's always these stories, it's like, well, they had reshoots and we dubbed Sam's voice and this was what's your take on it? How do you see it?
Well, because I had to be, as a creative guy, as an actor, as a professional, when I watched Flash Gordon, I made up my mind, I've got to be objective when I see this. Okay, I was in it, yeah, because I'm very hard on myself. But anyway, I had to look at it on and try to put myself in the audience's point of view. And I thought, okay, this is cool. Okay, but wait a minute now. Should I be laughing at this? Is this funny? Are they trying to be funny? The special effects are kind of campy. They're kind of corny. But wow, they're also visually vibrant and rich and wonderful. So me, I was thinking, okay, I don't know how I should react to this. Hmm. And maybe that's what happened. I think, and of course, I was overthinking a lot of it. I loved it. I loved it visually. Of course, I was very hard on myself when I saw it. Could have made some other choices. But I just thought, wow, man, this is spectacular. But I think maybe the reason why it wasn't a huge box office bonanza in America is because people overthinking it, you know? Hmm. Just sitting there. Flash Gordon is the movie you go to, you get a big bucket of popcorn and grab some refreshments and sit back and just enjoy the ride. You know, I mean, if we look deep enough into anything, we could pick it apart. Yeah. But just sit back and enjoy the humor. Visually astounding. I mean, visually, the reds, the golds, it's unlike anything else, I think, in filmmaking. Yeah, I mean, even the lines, the funny dialogue. I mean, I'm just now discovering dialogue for the first time. Really, I've only seen the movie maybe 8 times because it's hard for me to sit there and look at myself over and over again. So I've only seen it maybe 7 or 8 times. But I'm learning stuff even now because I didn't have time. I didn't have time then to enjoy the making of it because didn't have time. I didn't have time to even think about it. I'd walk on this big set of Arboria, which they spent $1 million on. I said, well, yeah, that's cool. Okay, Sam, come here. We got to rehearse this fight scene. Okay, you do that. Okay, Sam, get over here right now, quick. We got to shoot this scene. I mean, it was just pulled to and fro, back and forth. So now I appreciate all the professionalism and just the overall look, you know, on what was produced by the, you know, all the creative geniuses behind it. Yeah. Again, if we're nitpicky and we're really, we're always looking to find something negative about anything or anybody, we're going to find it. So why not just sit back and just enjoy the ride and be easy on everybody else, including yourself. You know, so that's really, I think if people can just do that with Flash Gordon, they'll have a great adventure and a great experience.
I completely agree. Well, we didn't get you in Flash, any more Flash movies, but you did return to the world of Flash Gordon in a big way. 2007 was big for you with Flash Gordon. You reunited with Melody Anderson for a commentary track. Talk about working with Melody, what she brought to it, and reuniting with her after all those years.
Yeah, Melody is my sister. I mean, really, we really are like brother and sister. I know she lived with my fiance and I in London for, oh, I think at least 3 months. And we really were like brother and sister. She was wonderful. I mean, and we had, as far as our we had this unique thing because I came on board, I was a brunette. They dyed my hair to blonde.
Yeah.
She was a blonde, and they dyed her hair to brunette. So it was really kind of funny. You know?
The chemistry is amazing between. It's my goal to track down this commentary that you've recorded. It's very rare. We got to find this thing. I don't think it's available for download anymore, but I can't wait to hear that. And the same year, you appeared on the Flash Gordon TV series.
Was it 2007? Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah,
yeah, it was the same year, and it was the episode Revelations as Kreb, the prisoner.
Yeah, I have a funny story about that. I should include that in my book, which I will, but very funny. Eric Johnson, who played Flash Gordon, great guy. But you have to remember, when we met for the first time, I was already, he met me after 4 hours of hair and makeup for that character that I played, that dungeon, that person, that character, Kreb, who'd been living in the dungeon for 20 years with long, stringy hair, black teeth, legions and sores all over my face. And, of course, I talked, you know, like I was out of my mind, like a madman. So when I introduced myself to him on the set, you know, he was kind of, I'm not saying he was scared, but he was taken back by me because this is not, you know, this, I didn't look anything like Flash Gordon. But long story short, I wanted to do to him what Buster Crabbe did to me. When Buster Crabbe met me, he said, Sam, I want to pass the mantle to you. I want to speak a blessing over your life. I want to pass the Flash Gordon mantle over to you and bless you so you can carry the torch. I thought that was incredible. So imagine me as the character dressed up as Kreb, as this creepy-looking dungeon guy with black teeth, and I think I was still in character. And I said, hey, Eric, I want to talk to you, man. I got something special I want to share with you. He goes, okay, go ahead. No, I said, I want to do it. You know, we're on the set. I said, I want to do it over here by the exit door so nobody could hear. And he looked at me like I was out of my mind. And he followed me with a lot of caution over by the exit door. I said, Eric, I just want to do what Buster Crabbe did to me, and I just want to bless you, and I want to bless you and give you the mantle so you can carry on the Flash Gordon character and you know, just have a spirit of excellence wherever you go. And he looked at me and he said, okay, thanks. And then he walked away. He was like, he was so happy to get away from me.
Did he get who you were? Like, did he know who you were?
Well, he had to know who I was. I was playing the character of Kreb. You know? Of course he knew who I was, but you know, like, to look at me, if you look at that character.
Yeah. You're unrecognizable.
I looked worse than the worst homeless person you could ever think of.
It's a weird look, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, so.
Well, how do you think he did? How do you think he did as Flash Gordon?
Well, I think he did good. I think what was missing in that series, creatively, I don't think it had the edge. I don't think it had the edge that it needed. You know, but yeah, I liked a lot of pieces of it. It was fun. It just needed, I believe, more of an edge. No sense of danger. I think the sense of danger was missing. You know.
We talked about that with Eric. They needed to get to Mongo quicker. They needed to get there, and it was a little earthbound. But it's a cool series. And bring it full circle. What you're working on now? We've got. Well, you came back in Ted. Seth MacFarlane called you directly.
He did. Yeah, I got this call from this guy. I said, "Who's this?" He said, "Seth MacFarlane." And I said, "Who are you again?" And
you did to him what Eric Johnson did to you.
Yes. And anyway, he said, Sam, when I was 9 years old, I saw you. I saw the movie Flash Gordon. It changed my life forever. And now I'm in a position. I want to do this movie, Ted. And I want to bring you on board so you could more or less play yourself or play a parody on yourself. And so I said, yeah. I said, you know, send me the script. We'll do it. And we did Ted 1. Ted 1 became not only a huge success, but it broke box office records. And then, of course, we just finished Ted 2.
Can you tell us anything about your role in Ted 2? Because you have a cameo. I mean, people can kind of go on YouTube and watch your kind of fractured version of yourself in Ted. It's very, very
that's
fractured.
It's funny. Fractured version. I've never heard that. That's kind of cool, yeah.
But can you tell us anything about Ted 2? Is it a bigger role? Or are you saving the universe again?
Yeah, bigger. I think it's maybe the same amount of film time, you know?
Okay.
But with some other dynamics going on that I really I don't think I'm allowed to talk about it because it will ruin it for all the moviegoers.
Fair enough. That's right. We don't want to ruin it for Flash Gordon saving the universe.
They expect this to be even bigger and better than Ted 1, and it's funny. You know, Mark Wahlberg is incredible. He's and of course Ted the Bear is always that Seth MacFarlane's voice. And then Amanda, you know, is fantastic. And just the whole cast, the whole supporting cast. It's funny. It really is.
Coming full circle. And you know, when you're not saving the universe, you're saving some folks closer to home. Tell our listeners a little bit about your company, Inner Cordon. Because I got you working right now. We're talking to you while you're working.
I want to wrap it up and get you
back to work. But what can you tell us about Inner Cordon?
Well, I just crossed the border from Mexico back into the U.S. And about 10 years ago... Being a former Marine and all that before I was ever an actor, it was kind of slow for me, to be honest, in the movie business. And, I was at the age of 50 and it was time. And my wife was very encouraging about, looking at perhaps another profession, at the same time, never really leaving the movie business, but, you know, it's time to, well, as she said, there's the door. We have some young children. The door's right there. Don't come back until you have another professional job, a professional vocation. So I said, yeah, I can do that. And I know at the time, it might sound humorous and fun, but really I think it's a lesson for a lot of men in America who, and I understand, look, we have to receive, look, there's a time to receive unemployment, there's a time to receive help from and assistance from other people. But really, men in America, if our bodies are sound and our minds are sound, and we could pick up a pick or a shovel, or we are we have a core competency with a computer or whatever it may be, driving a vehicle, it's time to turn off the television. Get your butt outside and go get a job and provide for yourself and provide for your family. Otherwise, it's real easy, which I did, to fall into, wait a minute, I'm an actor and I can only do acting parts. Well, you know what? If you're not in demand for whatever that is, you know, if it's selling cars, if it's driving trucks, if it's acting, if it's running if you're the CEO of a company that's not happening for you, then you need to find something else. And that's what I did. And it's amazing what humility, you know, as men, when we learn to get over ourselves and stop the baby talk and have somebody who loves us and cares about us to tell us the truth. When I did this, when I put this into action and I made a few phone calls about, you know, what is it going to take for me with my background as a former Marine, I want to get into this high-end security stuff, the same as the Secret Service, the same as the U.S. State Department, the same as the Department of Defense. I want to protect high-level people from kidnapping and assassination. And I was told what to do, and I had to get all this training and all these certifications. And 6 months later, I was protecting a billionaire. And then right away, I had an offer to go a year later to go to San Diego to to take over the cross-border security operations into Mexico. So that's what I've been doing for the last 9 years, is protecting dignitaries and high-level people, protecting their lives from bad people.
Yeah, you're going into these hot. You're going into these hot spots. Do any of them recognize you as Flash Gordon? It's like,
you know, it's a great question, and usually not, because the corporate executives and these other type of dignitaries, they live in another world, Joe. You know,
they're not nerds in their basement like me.
Right? Yeah. Or they're not watching movies. They're in front of a laptop all day long, or their iPhone.
Fair enough.
Or their notebook, and they're engaged, man. They're engaged into running billion-dollar corporations.
Fair enough. I set myself up for that.
And so, but Joe, here's the lesson learned. Not only did I get over myself and listen to a person who loved me and cared about me, and got a job, I want people to hear this, men, got a job. guess what happened a couple years later when I made that commitment? The phone started to ring again to do more movies. That's how the mathematics work. Any other way, it's not going to work when we are so bullheaded and stubborn on, no, I'm just an actor. Well, let me tell you something. You know, this is where we really need to. And guess what happens? When you do that, I mean, I started this whole another, I became a security professional. And I'm also a professional actor. And now it's icing on the cake, because I'm in a position now where I can run these security operations as long as I want. I can come and go as I please. Of course, I got to make sure that my spot is covered. And when I go away to do a movie or a television show, I can come back and there's always a full-time job there for me. So that's how life works. And also, I want to add this. It took a lot of prayer, too. Joe, my wife and I pray a lot. It took a lot of answered prayer, and not, you know, men that don't work, we become very frustrated, and frustration leads to anger. And the best thing that a man can do for himself and for his family is to work. I don't care if it's picking up a pick, a shovel, a lawnmower, driving a truck, you know, if it's labor or if it's white collar or blue collar. Get out there, and even though you may not like this particular job when you start out, you know, God will honor your hard work. He'll honor your commitment, and guess what? He'll open up an opportunity, a door for you to do something that you've been created to do your entire life. And this is where I belong. I belong in the security industry, and I belong in the film industry. And it's wonderful.
Sounds like you got a great support system in your wife, who sounds pretty intense, almost as intense as Ming the Merciless. My goodness, she'd give Ming a run for his money there.
Yeah.
You mentioned about giving back to Loving Life Foundation. Real quick, are you still working with Loving Life Foundation?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, it's a youth group at our church, and that's really what it is. You know, we're in San Diego. We have a great church, and it's not just the church that we help and the people that come there. We deal with multiple other charities and organizations and churches in Mexico. We're helping the homeless. We're feeding, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but we're feeding thousands of people a year. We're visiting orphanages we have just in the Tijuana area. There's actually an orphanage on, there's four orphanages in I think an 8 mile radius. So we're taking supplies there all the time, helping the children. What else? I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And
yeah.
A lot of kids have single moms; they don't have dads, and it's up to us men to get out there and to encourage and instill certain values, good values, in these children. And I have five children myself and a granddaughter, but my children are ages 13 to 31. My granddaughter is a year and a half. So the same thing applies there, you know, and God's been so good to us, and this the business world has been so good to us. We we have to give back, you know.
Well, I know this has been a—I know this has been a long time passion of yours, because even in interviews I've watched back in your Flash Gordon days, you were talking about like working with the Durango Community Recreation Center and things like that. So I know this has been something that you've been doing for a long, long time. So amazing stuff. Hey, fans want to see you. I'm going to mention all of your appearances coming up after this interview on the show. How can fans find out more about you? Social media, Twitter. How can we find out where you're going to be?
I think you can do the Facebook now. The Facebook is, we have a good crew running the Facebook now. And I give them, because I think what happened was, I think we had somebody who was saying he was me running the Facebook page. It was hysterical, you know, but that wasn't me. You're not going to find me, you know, at a party holding a bong and, you know, with two blondes on my left and four brunettes on my right, you know. So anyway, after we identified that this was not me, you know, we're basically taking the bull by the horn, and pretty much Facebook is because I was told by my children, Dad, Facebook is just for couples now. The young people are not using Facebook anymore. I said, I got this whole new demographic. I've got the grandparents, I've got their children, you know, as far as fans of Flash Gordon. Yeah. And now because of Ted, I've got this younger demographic. So, you know what? I think Facebook can cover all of them. But if they just, if they just do the Facebook thing, then and I think you have the schedule too. Did I send you?
You're going to be in Texas. You're going to be in.
I'm going to be at the comic. What's it called?
South Texas Comic Con.
Those dates again are January. Is it the 24th and 25th?
24th and 25th. We've got dates in March in Las Vegas.
That is in Laredo, Texas.
Yep.
I believe January 24th. And then, am I going to be in Mexico City?
We've got Las Vegas coming up. We've got Mexico City. We've got Stockholm. We've got Germany. We've got the UK and Canada. You've got the world covered. You saved the universe. You saved every one of us. We're gonna get all this out. We can't wait to see you at some of these appearances. Meet Flash Gordon. He's out there. He's saving the world. He's saving billionaires. He's saving all of us. Sam, happy 35th anniversary to Flash Gordon. We're looking forward to these upcoming projects and appearances. Oh, my goodness. I thank you for taking some time to talk with me today on Comic Book Central.
Anytime, Joe. You feel free to call anytime.
Life lessons from Sam Jones, who not only saves lives on screen, he's saving them in real life, too. I think he's exactly right. You just got to have fun when you're watching Flash Gordon. Folks, do not take the film too seriously. I know some do. They think it's cheesy and it's, you know, corny, campy, whatever. That's the point of it. It's a fun ride that just keeps getting better with age. Just doing homework for these episodes, I've watched it a couple of times, and it just keeps getting better with each viewing. Superstar Alex Ross, he's declared it his favorite film. You can catch him expressing his love for the flick on the Blu-ray extras. I'm telling you, this movie has everything you'd want in a comic book film. It's true to the source material. It's got crazy cool stunt work. It's got 1980s style special effects. Who doesn't love those? Lasers that go pew, pew, pew. The world of Mongo is brought to life. Max von Sydow's Ming the Merciless. It's amazing. It's got Sam Jones and Melody Anderson. What more do you want? I'll put the link to the Blu-ray in the show notes, as well as the link to order The Spirit, Sam's 1987 TV movies. We mentioned that's been released on DVD as well. It's pretty cool. You got to check it out. A link to Sam's Facebook page is also there as well. I want to mention the details on Sam's upcoming appearances. We alluded to those in the interview. Hey, go meet him in person. Ask him about Flash Gordon. Ask him about The Spirit. Ask him about the dating game. Whatever you want to ask him about. It's January 24th and the 25th. South Texas Comic Con in Laredo, Texas. March 8th, Sam's going to be appearing at the NASCAR Sprint Series race in Las Vegas, Nevada. March 13th through the 15th, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, at the La Mole Comic Con in Mexico City, Mexico. Stockholm, Sweden, dates in April 25th through 26th, that's pending. I don't think it's been confirmed yet, but keep an eye on Sam's Facebook page for that. May 21st through the 24th, FedCon, Dusseldorf, Germany, with Melody Anderson, a Flash Gordon reunion. Ah, if only I could be in Germany in May. That would be awesome. All German fans of Flash Gordon, if you're listening in Germany, May 21st to the 24th, go check it out. Flash Gordon reunion. A date in the UK is pending. And then in October, Hamilton Comic Con in Hamilton, Canada. Go check it out. Once again, big thanks to Sam Jones for making some time to join me on the show, talk about Flash and the Spirit. Still no word on tracking down that Flash commentary with Melody Anderson. So if any of you out there have any information on that, write in and tell me. It's joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click the Signal Me tab on the website, comicbookcentral.net. Or just, if you don't have information on that, you just want to drop me a line, say hi, tell me what you think of the show, tell me what some of your favorite comic book themed projects are. Send me an email. If you'd like, record an MP3 greeting. Send it along. I'll play that on the show as well. While you're making friends with Sam on Facebook, if you haven't already, be sure to give Comic Book Central a like on Facebook. Facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network. Include network on there. Make sure you get the right one. Share the lair and follow Comic Book Central on Twitter @ComicBookCTRL. Subscribe to the show in what is now a featured podcast on iTunes Essentials. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You are not going to miss an episode then. If you like what you're hearing, folks, and I hope you do, please be so kind as to leave a review in iTunes. Some of you have done that. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much. A couple of emails to read this week. Virtual Willie Lumpkin did stop by with some special deliveries. First up, friend of the show and my special guest on episode 10 of Comic Book Central, TV's Billy Batson from Shazam, Michael Gray, wrote in. Michael writes, "Joe, I'm going to be on an episode of the hit series Archer. Should be lots of fun, so stay tuned. No more details available, except that I'm overjoyed to be on the show." Well, thanks for writing in, Michael. And speaking for all the listeners, we're overjoyed you're going to be on the show as well. Can't wait to hear about that. Thanks for the heads up on your appearance. We'll keep an eye out. Archer is an animated show on the FX network. I'll definitely mention when that episode airs as soon as I get the word. I also hope we're going to be able to see Michael on the big screen as well, even if it's just a cameo, when Shazam hits theaters in 2019. Oh, 2019, that is such a long way off. But, you know, we get the DC Universe, they're kicking in a lot of great movies coming up. So, hey, it'd be cool to see Michael pull off one of those, like, Stan Lee cameos. Maybe he can be driving an RV or something. That'd be cool, just saying. Thanks for writing in, Michael. Also heard from one of my fellow podcasters, Tracy Morris. Tracy and her husband, Scott, co-host the fantastic Disney podcast called Disney Indiana. If you're a Disney fan, or if you just want to add a truly enjoyable podcast to your listening queue, check out Scott and Tracy over at DisneyIndiana.com. Tracy writes, "Joe, we caught the Marvel Universe live show when it came through town, and we're doing a review for our next Disney Indiana episode. We want to point our listeners over to your episode 33. Is there a direct link to the show notes for that episode? Thanks. P.S. Just wrapping up your Monster Kid Radio Hold That Ghost episodes. Another great show. Scott and I have the Abbott and Costello box set as well and have made our way through the first two films, A Night in the Tropics and Buck Privates. They were fun enough, but you can tell the studio still doesn't quite know what to do with the boys. I enjoy seeing their bits translated to the silver screen. We've also caught a few episodes of the Abbott and Costello show thanks to MeTV." Well, thanks for writing in, Tracy. Oh, yeah, thanks for mentioning Monster Kid Radio, too. Those were fun episodes to record with Derek Cook over at MonsterKidRadio.net. We wrapped up the Evan Costello horror comedy series, so check that out, MonsterKidRadio.net. And Tracy, thanks for sharing episode 33 of Comic Book Central with your listeners. That was my interview with Marvel Universe Live producer Shonda Sawyer. Folks, if you check out the Allies section of the Comic Book Central homepage, comicbookcentral.net, you're going to find a link to the Disney Indiana podcast in the Allies section. Tracy and Scott are definitely friends of the show. For past episodes of Comic Book Central, Tracy, I do have those archived by month on the website right now. So if you just click July 2014 link on the episodes page, episode 33 is there. I'm still working on some aspects of the site, not a specific one link to the direct episode. They're kind of all bunched by month, but that is the easiest way to find it for now. Or, of course, subscribe on iTunes. You're not going to miss any of the episodes. And I am envious that you got to see the show already. My goodness. Just talking to Shonda, oh, it was incredible. I've been reading all the reviews. I hear it's amazing. End of 2015 for those of us who live here in Columbus. Again, another long way off. Good things come to those who wait, though, right? Okay, I'm still looking forward to it. That's going to be awesome. Glad you enjoyed the show. Can't wait to hear the Disney Indiana podcast, your review of it. Be sure to look for Tracy and Scott's review on the podcast Disney Indiana at disneyindiana.com. Well, that is all the time we have for today. Like the spirit, I am disappearing into the night, but fear not, I shall reappear, because next week on Comic Book Central, you will hear from the man who rocked a plaid sport coat and carried a briefcase like no other. The man who headed up the OSI, straddled two television networks at the same time, and gave Steve Austin and Jamie Summers their weekly missions. Comic Book Central is going bionic with Oscar Goldman himself, Richard Anderson. Until then, keep in good spirits, keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Long live Flash! You've saved your life. Have a nice day.
Yeah! Peace for everyone!